part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm not doing part.
Fanboy.com.
How are you doing, Neil?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you doing?
That's great. I'm doing okay. It's been a crazy summer, as you probably noticed, with me having to change the schedule around, but I apologize for that. I was just apologizing to Tyler.
You're a flaky person. It's all right.
Flaky person. I'm doing my best, everyone. I'm doing my best. It's falling apart. It's all falling apart. No, but I'm happy to see you. I'm good. And I'm happy to talk to you.
But likewise, I'm trying to think if I sign out and sign back in again, would that try with a video? I mean, are you recording this or is it just for transcripts?
No, I'm recording it. This is for, audio. Come on, Neil. This is an audio podcast. He totally forgot about me. It's only been a couple of years.
No,
he doesn't know what this is.
I thought you may have upgraded and also did a video podcast.
No, I don't do. Nobody wants to see my dopey face on the internet, Neil. No, nobody wants to see my face on the internet. It's all audio. It's all old timey radio, internet radio stuff here. So no video allowed. No video allowed here. Well, let's just start off by saying thank you for joining me on what is, for me, a Sunday morning. So, Raymond, am I calling you Raymond or Tyler? Or, like, how are we working this out?
Just Raymond is perfect.
Okay, great. So, Raymond, not Tyler.
I think it's interesting to explain why there's confusion of your first name.
Well, he explained it a little earlier, but he can re-explain it if you want. Go for it.
Oh, yeah. So there's Raymond. My name is Raymond Tyler Woodsmall. But my parents called me Tyler my entire life.
Yeah.
Never ever called me Raymond. And I didn't use the last name Woodsmall. My mother is actually an author.
Okay.
And I was in a bookstore one time when she was had a signing, and they had a poster like a signing with Cindy Woodsmall.
Uh-huh.
And then this older dude came up to the poster, looked at it, and went, "Woodsmall, I'd hate to be the kid with that last name."
Oh, jeez, no.
And then I knew right then, I was like, okay, if I ever write, I'll change. I'll do like Raymond or something like that.
That's a better explanation than what you gave me a little earlier. But
yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, interesting.
Nom de plume is then needed.
Nice. Well, let me just start off by saying that my name is Christian Horn. This is the part-time fanboy podcast, even though Neil forgot what it was or what we do.
Is this a podcast?
What's that?
This is a podcast?
Yeah, it's a podcast. Or at least it tries to be. It tries to be. Part-time fanboy. My name is Christian Horn. I'm on the line with two very special guests. I'm going to introduce Neil first because I know him better. And I've met him actually in person once. And I actually very much like him as an individual. Nothing against you, Raymond, but we just
That's
met.
Okay.
I have Neil Gibson on the line and a gentleman who would like to be called Raymond Tyler. Don't call him Woodsmall. And you guys, I always like to start off by saying if somebody has a crowdfunding thing or a Kickstarter thing going on, you currently have a Kickstarter running for what I consider to be an excellent book called Amputation Capital. I picked this thing up. I mean, you guys were nice enough to send me a copy of all five issues. And I picked this thing up and I could not put it down. Like, I loved it from beginning to end. Neil, I may say that this may be one of my favorite things that T-Pub has ever done. I really, really enjoyed it.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Yeah. And that's not to give your company the short shrift because you do a lot of great stuff, but I very much enjoyed this. And I just love the art. I love the coloring. I love the story. And I need to know which one of you two sick individuals came up with this idea first, because it's really, really great. And kind of messed up as well.
That's all Raymond. He takes all the credit. No, really, he does. It's his concept. And in fact, Raymond, why don't you tell us where you came up with that idea? You sick, sick mind.
Yeah, terrible person.
I worked in influencer marketing.
Actually. Oh, no. Okay.
So I worked in influencer marketing for a startup company. It was one of my first jobs out of a BFA in creative writing.
Okay.
So I got a job pretty much just writing copy and posts for Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And at some point, that job morphed into a influencer marketing position. And I ended up working with a lot of influencers, a lot of minor celebrities to promote the company that I was working for.
Oh, interesting.
So the idea came from that. It also came from I lived in Los Angeles for about a year and a half. And kind of wanted to mix those two things.
Yeah.
So that's how the concept started. And then Neil and I got together and we worked out the world and the characters and all that good stuff. But the idea of celebrities selling body parts and having a skin net worth came from a mixture of influencer marketing and living in Los Angeles for a couple of years.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I mean, I'm currently in LA and I do have to say that this does not make LA look good in any way, shape, or form, which is fine. I totally understand where all that's coming from. But why don't you gentlemen give me the elevator pitch as to what Amputation Capital is all about so that everyone can know just the sort of general idea. I mean, you skirted around it a little bit, but why don't you do like a little bit of a deeper dive? Because I want people to know why it's such a sick and wonderful, crazy thing that could probably happen at some point, which makes me sad, but go on.
Yeah, so Amputation Capital is a dystopian present where celebrities and influencers sell body parts on a publicly traded skin market. The story focuses on three characters that are displaced and objectified by the skin business. Alfie is a lowly skin trader who has dreams of becoming a CEO. Morgan is a recently divorced actress who sold her ring finger for $2 million. And our favorite, Walter, is a former porn star who sold his, can I curse?
Yeah.
His cock as a symbolic gesture of solidarity after accidentally appearing in a porn film with trafficked women. And the three main characters mirror different aspects of the skin business, buying, selling, and sometimes eating. So yeah.
eating the flesh that they buy off of other people, right. We should say.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, it doesn't make LA, like, you're like, I moved to LA and I've worked with influencers and I came up with this idea. Like, to me, it's just like, oh, wow. But in a way, it's also perfect. It's a perfect commentary on kind of like what's happening to our culture and just like how far people will go to sort of stay in the limelight, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and so
some people would just stay in the limelight. Some people even go on podcasts.
Yeah, I can't believe it. Yeah, podcasts. Yeah, I'm not about willing to sell my middle finger or any other body parts to blow up my presence on social media. As a matter of fact, I hate social media. I should be much better at it, as anyone who listens to this podcast knows. But it brought up a lot of issues. But one of the things that I really enjoyed about it is, I mean, it's kind of like a dark subject matter, right? But the art and coloring is sort of like very bright. It's very attractive. It's not like sort of a, it's not like a downer palette, like in any way. It kind of sneaks you in the back door that way, where you start reading it and you're like, oh, this is very light and interesting. It's kind of got like a little bit of a manga style or influence to it, maybe animation too, in my opinion. But the subject matter is very, very dark. Can you speak to that? Like, were you going for that when you went for the visual look of this book?
Neil, I think you would probably be the best to answer that question. I remember when we were looking at colorists, I think it was when we were talking about colorists, you were looking at sort of the brighter, more attractive, right? Because of the juxtaposition with like the disturbing storyline, if I remember correctly. Do you remember?
Wait, let's get this straight. Raymond, you asked me to answer it, and then you answer before I have a chance to
It was my bad. I just wanted to, I didn't want to like throw you in the deep end and be like, hey, you remember this thing we talked about 3 years ago? This is a...
No, well, that's exactly it. Look, it's, you always start with the story, then the art, then the coloring, then the lettering. That's the order of things, as far as I'm concerned. And when we had the artwork wasn't that dark and gritty, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
Because if it was dark and gritty, then it would have been too much material and the artwork.
Yeah.
And sometimes it doesn't need the colorist with many options. This way, they had options, and I wanted though to go for a lighter tone to, as you say, offset the darkness that's inherent in it. But frankly, Raymond said it better than me. So yeah, screw you, Raymond.
My bad.
Oh man, I've started a conflict.
We've been working on this. We've been working on this for a while.
That's it. It's over.
We're done. I just destroyed the amputation capital. I just amputated the team of the amputation capital. I just broke them apart. You heard it all here first on my podcast that we're all struggling to stay relevant on. But that's one of the things. I don't really know anything about your background, Raymond, but I do know that Neil is in the UK, and you just told me a little earlier before, you know, we started officially recording that you're in New York. How did both of you meet, or how did you come to like discover one another, or I'm guessing that Neil discovered you, or how did that work?
I'll answer this. I get sent every week submissions.
Oh, okay.
95% are absolute rubbish.
Oh, geez.
But you have to be polite and encourage people.
Sure.
And but Raymond's wasn't. It was different from the others. Mm. And he had some concept art made. We didn't use the concept artist, but it showed that he'd put some thought into this, and he'd read the. He actually read our submission guidelines, which most people don't do. They just blank submissions to every single publisher. And so then that's how it started. And I thought there's an interesting concept here. And we met at New York Comic Con, because we were going anyway. And he graciously decided to buy the team dinner.
Oh.
Well, now I have to work with the sneaky
bribery works.
That was the plan.
No, it's going well to this day. I mean, I'm very excited. He's doing other comics, which he's talking about afterwards as well.
Sure.
But I'm very excited about working with Raymond. I think he's someone people should keep their eye on for the future.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's interesting because, I mean, for me with comics, I tend to focus on the artwork and stuff like that. But the writing, the dialogue here is really excellent. I mean, that's one of the things that kind of sucked me in particular, sort of the main kind of, well, I mean, the protagonist kind of changes for me at least midway through, right? Like, but
spoilers.
Yeah, not trying to spoil anything, not trying to say who's who or what's what, but the point of view sort of like the different characters I found to be really, really interesting. Can you speak to that at all, Raymond?
I really liked so the way that I described this comic, like in pitching it to Neil, was like Glengarry Glen Ross meets Saw.
Oh, jeez. Right? Yeah.
And
okay.
I wanted to do like a typical, or not typical, like a, to start off with an archetypal, like very much ruthless salesman, and then sort of go back and, show some pretty key points in his past that led him to not exactly be the way that he is, but to act the way that he is and to put on the face. I describe like Alfie, the primary character, as a kind of a scared kid who's LARPing as a salesman.
Oh, interesting. Right?
Is the way that I describe that character. He's not a very good character.
Yeah.
So, like a moral character or anything like that. That changes, and you're right. There's a perspective shift. Neil and I have worked on that. It was a while. We took a while writing this book, I think.
You did. It was very fast for me.
Well, how long ago did you guys start working on this? Crickets. No one wants to admit to it.
Before the pandemic.
Oh, okay.
Not much. I mean,
we met in
New York Comic Con 2019.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That's right.
So I think honestly, it was the start of the pandemic, really.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was. And then after that, we had some delays due to the pandemic
went to shit. Yeah,
absolutely. As it was very understandable. Artists, lots of delays along the way.
Sure. So, why don't you tell me why you hate Los Angeles? Because this past year or last year, I've been 30 years in LA. I moved here when I was like 19. So you can all figure out how old I am. I like LA, but I don't love it. Like, and I'm from back like in New Jersey, New York originally. And I've traveled just a little bit, not as much as many other people. But for some reason, there is something about LA that has kind of like kept me here, you know, for 30 years. So there must be something in it. But I totally get what people are talking about. Like when they come to LA and they walk away with this sort of impression of like just rapaciousness and vapidness and that sort of thing. So you said you were here for like maybe like a year, year and a half or something like that. What is it that made you like come away from Los Angeles and write this story about people amputating each other and eating human flesh?
Yeah, well, I got a job when I first moved there. This was before the influencer job. I got a job as a script reader.
Sure. Oh, great.
So I was a script reader and I did coverage on screenplays. Okay. And I actually didn't hate Los Angeles, but what was very tough for me, I was very young when I was there. I was 18. I turned 19 when I was there.
Okay.
So the primary memories that I have of Los Angeles, most of them are positive, but then there's this kind of seedy underbelly of people who either are minor famous or think that they're famous, who would very quickly take advantage of somebody like a lowly script reader like that. So there was that element of it. Usually from my memory of Los Angeles being there was mostly people who either had very minor celebrity or wanted to be famous, who were kind of taking advantage of a naive kid and some work, right?
Sure, sure.
Did a lot of free work for a lot of people, read a lot of free screenplays. I think it definitely wasn't a hatred, though.
Kind of a thing.
And it's funny, is like I had a job that, you know, that did some semblance of pay, but if being in Los Angeles, it felt like any person that I had met was wanted to be famous or was trying to convince me that they were. There was kind of that. That's where the vapidness came from. Now, that's not all of Los Angeles.
No, obviously not.
Imagination. Most of it is a lovely place, but kind of being a script reader, when people find that out, everybody wants you to read their script.
Well, it very much reminded me of something kind of like The Player or something like that, where it's like very much like, obviously every city has like terrible aspects to it, right? And inside the entertainment capital of the world, you're gonna have stuff like this. But to me, the thing that I just really loved about it is kind of like how amputation capital kind of just takes the whole system to an extreme where people are like, you could never imagine it would go. And then as we know in life in the past, like what, 5-6 years, like, oh, it can always go there. like things can always, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. I have no idea what you're talking about. Please.
Please inform you. Yeah. Exactly. Well, you're Prime Minister, Neil. Come on.
Okay. All right. Right. Fine.
What's going on? I mean, like, I have reason to talk. Our president, but you're Prime. How did he stay in power for that long, Neil? Explain it to me. We'll have to have a conversation some other time. Every time I read the news about him, I'm like, how? How is this happening? I'm just like,
I could ask you the same thing.
Yeah. Exactly. It's just people. So, I mean, Neil, when you met Raymond, and he presents you the script, I mean, you deal with like horror and stuff like that a lot. Like, how much of an input to the final story did you give? I mean, because I know that when we've spoken in the past, like, you've talked about how you've looked at a lot of people's comics or people's pitches and things like that. And one of the things that you're very good at is sort of like looking at something and identifying kind of like what more might need to be done. So when he submitted this to you and you met at New York Comic Con, like how did your working relationship develop?
That's actually a very good question. But I think it's best put to Raymond as to what I did to the script.
Okay. Neil's going to be the silent partner on this interview because I just insulted his prime minister, who he loved dearly.
For our writing process, it was so to answer your question, it was quite a bit. I did not actually really know how to write. How to do comics, really.
I went
to school. I had a BFA in creative writing. I had an MFA in fiction. I had really not ever done a comic script.
Okay. Before.
And so he has been a co-writer and a teacher and a mentor because I love reading comics. That's one of my favorite things to do. But as far as writing them, I had no experience writing.
Oh, that's interesting.
None. And so when he was interested in the story, it very much, I had read his books before. I had read several of his books before. Tell him this because it'll go to his head. I really liked his books.
Yeah, his books are great.
Before, yeah, right. Like they're really.
Raymond, I didn't hear that. Say it again.
Your books are great, Neil. There like they, is. Did like you get enough really, validation from us, right. Neil?
Yeah, they're really good.
Yeah, T-Pub right? is
and
great, Neil.
I started off with Twisted Dark.
Mm, yeah,
I absolutely loved that comic. I had actually gotten it, and I'm pretty sure it was a comic shop in Georgia.
Oh,
that
really?
That book, right? And I just found it kind of out of nowhere. Is what I remember is I just found the book out of nowhere and I had read it and I was like, wow, this is really cool. There's something like edgy and kind of punk rock about this almost. Yeah. Like it's really cool. So then we meet, we go out to dinner. I buy them dinner. He doesn't tell the part where we were going to meet the night before and my phone dies and I don't show up and I leave them.
Oh,
right. So then I buy them dinner the next day.
To make up for it. Got it.
Right. I left them.
You got to carry that charger around with you, Raymond. You
gotta, I know, dude. Like, I got booster. A new phone since then, but like that phone, like it was at the end of a iPhone and like the battery like went away in like 30 seconds.
I have to say, Raymond told me that like apparently there was some lint stuck in the socket off the iPhone. So even though you put the plug in, it wouldn't charge.
Yeah. Oh, really?
It was terrible. But Stacey
didn't believe you. And she said, don't bother meeting him. He's a waste of time.
Oh, wow.
Oh, no.
Emotions run high at New York Comic Con, I can imagine. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, no. It was so then to win the team back, I came back the next day and I bought
Oh, nice, nice.
I bought everybody dinner. So.
That's how it works. That's how. Yeah. Well, that is a good thing to do if you stood people up the day before, no matter what the problem is with your phone. But yeah, they don't have pay phones anymore, so you couldn't like just pick up a pay phone either, right? Like that's just
right. Yeah, no, there was absolutely nothing I could do.
Yeah,
I was just like wandering around, like. like hoping that I would see them on the street. Of course, that didn't happen.
Okay, in New York City. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. That didn't happen.
It's so funny because I was just back in New York for like a little quick vacation. There's all these like payphones that are on the in weird places like the New York City Public Library. They have like payphone, but they don't work. Like, and it's just, they're just like these weird relics. Like we kept picking up the handles and being like, does this work? And it's like, no, obviously they don't. And I don't know if there's just no money to not replace them, but like we kept coming across like a payphone here and there. And it was just like, what? Like, oh, they're still out on the street.
Yeah. It's funny. They still exist. And I don't know if any of them work.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I don't think any of them work.
That's so funny. No, but so what for you was the biggest challenge? Like, so if you come across Twisted Dark and you're like, I've got a story that I want to submit to you, assuming, Neil, that the pitch didn't have to come in like comic book script form. I mean, I have not looked at your submission guidelines lately, so I don't know how it works. Is it, how did you pitch it to Neil if you had not really written in comic book form or written a comic book script before?
You don't need to submit a script because what I want is I want the story in 5 bullet points.
Okay.
3 middle points and the end. If you can do that, you know what the story is really about, plot-wise.
Gotcha.
Now, then I want to know about the characters, and I want to know about the universe. And then I want to see if the dialogue is good, because I can fix that. So I'm primarily a comic book fan.
Mm.
I never wanted to be a creator. I liked reading good comics.
Yeah.
And most aren't good, frankly.
Yeah.
And then the good ones are amazing.
Yeah.
So if... And I've discovered that I can help people make their stuff better. That's what I enjoy doing most.
Mm.
So I want to see if they have, do they have a plot? Do they have interesting characters? Have they got an interesting universe? So with Raymond's work, he based some of the characters on people he knows.
Oh.
But instantly, those are real characters. So they're thought through. Mm. The world, he's already explained to you, that's an interesting world. What if you could sell body parts legally in a system for free?
Yeah.
You know? That's an interesting world. And then the plot, well, we had to change the plot a bit, but that's mm-hmm. That's my job. But the elements were all there for it. And the dialogue, that's mostly Raymond. So all the elements were there. I just needed to tweak it a bit.
Okay. But when somebody, it's interesting to me that you could discern something that you would want to, because to me, what you're saying when people, or what you want in a submission seems fairly simple, but you're saying that a lot of people don't give you how you want it, or you're not able to discern, because that seems not a lot to go by. Like to me, what you just said, like I needed 4 bullet points and I need some characters. You didn't need, because from what I understand, like other companies, they kind of like want like a full script of the first issue and then where you're going with the next. You don't need all that to sort of like engage with somebody, Neil. You just need it kind of like broken down to its simplistic structure, or?
Pretty much, because if you come to me with a finished comic, it's all artwork done and everything, I'll say, great. Go to Image or someone else. It's not for us.
Okay.
Because our value add is making your stuff better.
Gotcha.
That's what we want to do.
Okay.
And if you don't think it makes it better, great. We're not a good fit for you. But no one's had that response so far.
Uh-huh.
Why I want it broken down is it makes sense. And you may not know how to write a comic. That's fine. What matters is, do you have something that you want to say that's interesting?
Interesting. Okay. Well, that makes perfect sense to me. But from then, how did both of you go into sort of like constructing a comic book script? Because obviously I live in Los Angeles and I have worked with people or helped people who are writers for TV or movies and stuff like that. And then it's like, wait, I got to write in this format, where it's like, depending on what method you're talking about, like whether it's like the Marvel method or the DC, like breaking down every panel method, there's definitely sort of a translation that sometimes a writer of a film script or a TV script can't wrap their brain around. Is that something that you both had to work through as well?
He actually, so I knew how to write like film scripts, right?
Yeah, as yeah.
Script reader. But he showed me a few different methods. I remember Neil and I talked about a few different methods of ways of writing scripts. But then the method I was the most interested in is he pulled out the way that he writes scripts.
Okay.
Which is, I don't know if I could give it away. It's really cool.
So oh, I want to know now. You have to break it here. On
I started, Neil, tell him how you write a script.
I write in Excel.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Really I hate Excel. Spreadsheets, Neil. Neil, I don't like you anymore. Anyway, go on.
It gives you so much data.
Oh, yeah.
So much time is the most efficient way of writing.
I really thought I would hate it. Like at first, I was like, okay, this is kind of like maybe this won't work for me. I'll try it. Then I got into it.
Uh-huh.
It is so great.
Really?
Great. Yeah.
Oh, so yeah. I mean, I don't suppose Neil can break down his secrets, but so you use Excel?
Yeah, because it like okay, so the traditional way of writing, there's no. In film and TV, if you don't write in the standard format, no one will open it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They won't touch it. Like in comics, there is no set format, thankfully. It may change in the future, but right now there isn't one. But the most common method is, it says, page 7. On this page, there are 8 panels. In panel 1, we see blah, 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 blah. So-and-so says this, so-and-so says that. And what happens if you, oh, I've got to cut this into two pages.
Yeah.
The amount of extra work you have to do to fix that is such a hassle.
Yeah.
So I use Excel where in one column, I just put the number 1 and that denotes a new page. And it automatically says, okay, in this script, you've got 27 pages. There are this many panels. You have this many pages with 4 panels, this many pages with 3 panels. You have this many. It gives you the data on everything you've done. So you can tell if it's repetitive or not. And if you want to just add a page or change the page break, you just change the number. Boom. There's no writing required. The calculations change everything instantly. And then after that, I have 3 columns. 1 for what's the artist description? What does the artist need to know? 2, what is the dialogue saying? And 3, what does the colorist need to know for that panel?
Uh-huh. Oh, wow. I mean, you're kind of breaking my brain a little bit with Excel because I use spreadsheets in my daily, you know, work, and I just cannot, I'm not a big fan of them, but this is interesting. Is this something that you teach people, or is it just like a T-Pub secret? Is it just like a Neil Gibson, or do you have like a way to do this like on your website, or is this just something that you've got to keep close to the vest because it's yours?
No, I believe in the Toyota model where they are the most efficient manufacturers of cars, and they teach everyone what they do. They just happen to do it best themselves.
Uh-huh.
So I have a free comic book course on my website, tpubcomics.com, that teaches people how we make comics. And I break comics down into 6 areas. You need the first is the premise, then it's the writing, then it's the artwork, then it's the coloring, then it's the editing. So lettering, then the editing. Those are the 6 areas. And each is important, but it's in terms of time, it's weighted towards writing first. And each of those I break down further into what are the elements. So, for example, do you want to hear this?
Because if I no, I want to hear this. This is interesting. I mean, go on.
Okay,
this is fascinating. This is the type of stuff that people want to hear.
So, well, thank you. Well, so each of those 6 elements, I break down further, and then the reason I break it down is because when I first started, I'd have to give feedback, and feedback is a gift, by the way.
Yeah.
Because if you, the worst case scenario is you don't like and you don't agree and don't like what people say, and you say thank you and ignore it.
Sure.
Best case scenario is it makes you think, would listening to this make the product better?
Yeah.
And if so, you should listen to it and take it on board. But if you give feedback, worst feedback is someone says, I didn't like it. It was crap.
Sure.
Well, frankly, that is awful. It makes you feel bad and doesn't give you anything helpful.
Yeah.
So if I'm going to tell artists I don't like what they drew, I have to explain why I didn't like what they drew.
Exactly.
So I'm going to skip the writing side. So for the art side, there's 4 elements to it. The first is the quality or style. And I say or style because you can have like a Calvin Hobbes style art, or you can have, like a manga style art, whatever, or really hyper detailed. They're all different styles.
Yeah.
But whatever style you choose, do you like the style, and is the quality good enough?
Yeah.
That's the first thing. You notice that in a split second. The next is clarity. And a lot of manga suffers from this because it's great artwork, but what's actually going on?
Yeah.
And that's like clunky writing. Uh-huh. But you have to make the reader spend time and think as to what's going on. You fail them. If you've ever read a book, a page, and you suddenly get to the end of the page and go, wait, I haven't taken this in. That's the writer failing you because they haven't made something clear and your brain didn't understand it.
Yeah.
So the second area is clarity. The third, which is the most important one, is the choice of shot. What angle do they choose? How do they choose to frame it? That's the most important. And then the fourth element is storytelling, which is how you pace panel to panel, how do you, the choice of shots combine together. So when I go back to people, I tell them which of those elements didn't work for me.
Sure.
And that goes in tandem with the writing. And I've got a whole course on this stuff, so I don't want to go into too much detail.
No, absolutely. But where can people find that course?
It's for free on teapupcomics.com.
I'm totally going to check this out because I'm always fascinated in different ways of doing things, but I hate Excel spreadsheets, but I will be open-minded and check that out. No, I mean, is the whole process between you two and then the artist and the colorist, is that all shared through an Excel spreadsheet?
No.
Okay, all right.
So the Excel spreadsheet is to create the script, and we have...
Gotcha.
Things for the plot, for the universe, for characters as different tabs on the spreadsheet, and then for the writing itself as one worksheet with the columns I explained.
Uh-huh.
Once the script is done, it can be copied, pasted to Word for and then sent to the artist.
Got it.
When the artist comes back, the system I work on is I want roughs or thumbnails, and then when we get the thumbnails, I put in the rough lettering, and I say no. That body, we need to change the way the people are positioned because the way that the story flows, this person's got to speak left on the left hand side first, or this doesn't work, or I don't like the choice of shot here, it doesn't quite work for me. Any changes to the art, I put in a yellow box. Any changes for the any notes for the colorist is the green box. Any notes for the letterer is in the blue box, and that's why. And they all know this. They get sent it. They just look for the right color boxes for them, and they see what changes need to be made. And then the reason I do this is because when they send back the corrected artwork, I don't have to refer to an email or a Word document. I just slap it into the software and I see if the box is still there, what it's pointing to. Have they fixed it? Yes or no?
Oh, this is interesting. So, Raymond, you're sort of being exposed to this for the first time. How did all this work for you? I mean, because especially coming from like a screenwriting or, you know, television writing sort of background, I mean, you had said like, oh, this is Excel and stuff like that, but like, how hard was it for you to adapt to Neil's style of like comic creation?
So I had to fight against a lot of like MFA and BFA, trading kind of, I guess. When I went and I studied creative writing, for both the BFA and for an MFA, and kind of plot and structure, the meticulous detail is almost looked down on, if that makes sense. So that was a good bit of retraining the brain, but I think I picked it up pretty, I don't know. I don't exactly know what the breaking point was where like it clicked, because there are still things that with this method that I definitely have to ask Neil's advice on. I definitely have to get coaching
sorry to go off topic.
Go for it.
What do you mean, Raymond?
Like comic life. I think the comic life example is one that I just don't know how to work comic life
What's comic life? I don't even know what that is.
Sorry, that was the thing that he was talking about with the when he was talking about editing the
comic life is
the colors.
It's a software package where you can, if you're an amateur, you can just drop in artwork into different panels and you can change the size of the panels that you want, and you can put in lettering. It looks amateurish to a professional, but if you're just starting, it's a great tool to start making comics.
Oh.
But we use it just to put we just color the boxes, that instead of putting a speech bubble or balloon, we just do that, then color the boxes to give comments to the creators.
Oh, that's fascinating. I've never heard of that. Oh, so Comic Life is it just like a software you can buy or like a tool that
Yeah, I think the cheapest version is a Chrome extension, which is only like $5 or something.
Oh, wow. Okay. And so for you, Raymond, that was the biggest thing.
So yeah, so to be clear, the Excel method definitely didn't take too long. It was the rest of the editing method. I still have to ask advice on how to execute Comic Life or anything like that.
Raymond, it's drag and drop. What is wrong with you?
We've had this conversation so many times.
That's so funny. That's so
But
funny. Oh my God.
yeah, that's about it. Honestly, it becomes very intuitive, the Excel method.
Sure.
And that's kind of how I write every comic now. I've kind of stolen that for
Oh,
other
that's interesting.
projects. So that's how I write in Excel now.
Neil may be the person that makes me finally embrace Excel or Google Spreadsheet. I hate it all. I hate it. So it's so funny because Raymond, like you're very, I agree with you. Like there's something in the sort of like my creative brain that just like looks at this and it's just like I hate everything about this. Like, you
Right,
know,
yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
that's so funny. But wait, let's talk about amputation capital a little bit because, as I said, I very much did love this. But how dark is too dark? Because the guy selling his privates, I will just say, for me, I was just like, whoa. Like it's very, I mean, you know, I mean, the thing of it is like I don't want to scare people away from this book because it is dark. It's not horrible, like you know, it's not distasteful in any way. It's the pacing is great, everything works really well. But for me, the subject matter, I was like, as it kept going, like I was like, oh, like you know what I mean? And there's definitely ups and downs, it's not just like one downward trajectory. But for me, it was just like, oh, wow. And you know, that's why I jokingly opened up with like, which one of you sick puppies came up with this? Because it is sort of a thing that like, I mean, it's taking like Soylent Green to like another, you know, one aspect of it, not to spoil Soylent Green for anyone, one aspect of it to another level for me. You know.
I don't, yeah, as far as how dark is too dark, I'm definitely not sure. I grew up on some, you know, when I came around and started reading comics, the kind of comics that were around when I was a teenager were incredibly dark, violent, and gritty. It was kind of that era, you know, the Garth Ennis,
So
the
Vertigo
later
stuff.
Mark McGo all the Vertigo stuff, Mark Millar. Of course, there's Alan Moore. He's not quite as dark or as gritty as like Garth
He's
Ennis. I just remember.
not. Alan Moore can get pretty dark.
I guess you're right. I just like I always think about The Boys, which was like when I was a kid,
Oh.
that was actually a comic that I remember everybody was so into in the comic shop, right? So that was
I don't think The Boys is that dark. I think it's just gratuitous violence.
yeah,
Yeah,
I
it is.
agree.
Yeah, you know, that's actually a pretty good point. It is gratuitous violence. Yeah, I think Amputation Capital is really dark without the gratuitous violence. I don't
Yeah.
think that there's gratuitous violence. Say that again.
I don't think it's that dark.
Uh-oh.
I have a file on my computer called Twisted Darker, and no one has seen what's in there, and I don't think anyone ever will because
Oh,
I would
jeez.
not like to read it.
Oh, interesting. Is that stuff that you just keep that people submit to you that you're like, yeah, I'm not gonna do that because.
No, well, because what happens is like you get some like Jamie Oliver, he gets like hate mail for some of his recipes, whatever. So I get people going, "Why do you call this Twisted Dark? It's not dark." And you get this response. It's just being in the public eye, I guess. And I think they have a point. It's not that dark to me. It's just on the dark side of nature. So when I think about some of the darkest things that I've thought of, I think, "Oh, I could put that as a story." But it's not a story I'd ever want to read. It's unpleasantly dark. So, what stuff is, I think that's the answer to the question. What is too dark? stuff that I wouldn't want to, I wouldn't enjoy myself.
Yeah.
So absolutely. What's an example of like too much? Because I know that there are movies, like let's say just film or TV or anything like that, where you've sort of been, because I mean, like it's funny. One of the things you mentioned manga earlier, Neil, and I'm finishing up Blade of the Immortal. Like it's something that I picked up during the pandemic, and I started picking up the omnibus books. And one of the things you were talking about was like manga kind of storytelling, especially kind of when they flip the books and stuff like that. And then the bubbles are kind of all over the place. And sometimes the translation isn't great. And I love Blade of the Immortal. Like I've picked up all 10 omnibuses and I'm reading through it, but there's definitely aspects of the story where I'm like, these characters look too much the same, like, and it throws me off, or this translation doesn't seem to gel, you know what I'm saying? So there can be a bit of a struggle to read that. But in the ninth book, which is the book that I'm on, and I bought all 10 of them right away because during the pandemic, people were like, oh my God, paper, like we're not going to have paper. And, you know, prices were just skyrocketing. So I was just like, I like this. I know I'm going to finish it. So I bought it. Right. But in the ninth book, there is, I'll just say like a sexual assault scene. Right. And obviously this book was made before, you know, Me Too and all that stuff and all the craziness, but it's never something that I've been like, I can't say that it's like distasteful. I mean, it is distasteful, like what happens, right? But showing it in a distasteful way kind of like is the impact, you know? And I had a discussion with my wife about it because I was like, do I really need to like see this in a comic? And you know what I mean? So like, what is maybe too far for you guys? Like, what is something that's maybe crossed the line and been like, you know?
You just answered that question yourself there.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter the plot, what happens to the character, that can be horrific as you like.
Yeah.
But it's how you tell it. Right. You didn't have to see it. You could have had it in shadows or someone mentioned it. So that's the line. It made you feel uncomfortable and distasteful. There you go.
Yeah.
Right. And one of the things that I have a lot of problems, like I'll have to say, to the point where, and this is just a personal preference, right?
Absolutely.
But like, I literally will look up if something has sexual assault in it because I can't handle it. I really can't.
Yeah.
You know, like there have been books that have been like, oh, this is by my favorite writer, but I've heard there's a really, you know, tough scene in it. So I'm just, you know, it's obviously what I read is for the most part, for enjoyment. So I'll usually look up if something, if a piece of entertainment has sexual assault in it. And if it does, generally, not all the time, I'll go, okay, I'm going to just go ahead and pick something else off the shelf for me. That doesn't have to be for everybody. That's just a personal preference for me.
Yeah. So, yeah. No,
that's definitely something I couldn't imagine ever doing, like in a book, just because I don't think I could do it.
So, yeah. No, I mean,
I can't read it.
It's interesting because, there's a movie called, I think it's like called Serbian Film or something like that. And I read what it was about, and I'm a horror guy. Like I like horror. So like, and I like being shocked and, you know, mm-hmm. I like, you know, I'm not into like super gore, like, or, you know, but I like horror. I mean, we do horror films like during the month of October on this podcast. Like I like horror, but just reading what that film was about, I still haven't seen it. A friend gave me a DVD of it, and I was like, I still have not watched it to this day because it apparently deals with the subject matter where I'm like, why would I, especially after I had a kid of my own, I was just like, yeah, there was something. And it's weird because I've explained this to friends, like I mean I've always really liked horror, like when I was, but after I had a kid, something in my brain broke and I was just like, you know what? Maybe there's just stuff that I just don't want to look at anymore. You know, and again, that's just me, you know, you do you, whatever you want. You know, I believe in freedom of expression and all that stuff. I mean, there's freedom of expression and exploitation. Those are maybe two different things. I don't know. But for me, it was just very interesting how like my brain went, I'm not going to do that anymore. Right. I mean,
yeah, absolutely. Definitely. I definitely understand that. I'll say that there's when I'm writing something, if I think, would I be
would this shock me, or would it actually disturb me to the point where, like, I'm going to sleep at night and I'm thinking about it and it kind of ruins my evening?
Yeah.
If it would be the kind of ruins my evening, it's definitely not going in. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, I want you to enjoy the book. It's a dark world. And it's like what Neil said. There's a way to tell some of the most, you know, you can have whatever happen in the story, and there's a way to handle it where it doesn't leave the viewer pale.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Right. And so that's what I think when writing dark scenes.
Was there anything like, say, in approaching the artist, or when you started seeing like artwork come in, where you were like, this is too far, let's pull back, or maybe this is too much to show? Or like, Neil, were you seeing, did you ever see stuff where you were like, oh, let's, you know, as opposed to show this directly, let's just imply it, like that sort of thing?
No, because I honestly don't think Amputation Capital is that dark, in my opinion. It's not. So the honest answer is no, I didn't think so.
Okay. Yeah, no, I mean, right. For me, as is, I don't think, I mean, it doesn't present visually as dark, but to me, just the basic idea of like what humanity is kind of like willing to do to one another. And we've seen that in reality, you right. know, play out for the past several years, just how crazy things can get. It's funny to me because when you base it against the real world, like, no, it's probably, you know, not that dark, but the idea of people selling their body parts and then other right. rich people, you know, wanting to maybe use those pieces for nefarious. It is kind of disturbing at the very least. Right. Yeah.
I think what's good is that, cause I hear that regularly about how dark it is. And I think what's good is then we achieved the goal because it's yeah. dark without being very graphic.
Yeah.
Right? Cause
yeah.
there's really not graphic violence in it. And it's really just the concept, right,
yeah.
of it, kind of the exactly. icky world that makes it, you just maybe makes your skin crawl, which is the whole goal.
Yeah. Well,
like, is to create this very hyper, you know, icky.
Well, but also something that quite honestly could really exist, or,
yeah.
you know, organs on the open market in certain areas yeah. of the world, right? I mean, it's something right. that exists. So that's the thing, is it's not beyond the pale of like human imagining. I mean, it's
yeah, exactly.
happening. Stuff like this is happening, but it's part of what I loved about it. And I mentioned that earlier, is that the visuals are so like light and breezy, and the storytelling moves so quickly. Mm-hmm. And the dialogue is perfect, by the way. I mean, I just love the dialogue, and I loved how you both like differentiated each character. Like, each character had its own. I mean, you mentioned Alan Moore earlier. Like, Alan Moore, to me, his genius is not that he just thinks of different things, but when right. he writes a different book, it's literally like a different writer wrote it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I'm like, this yeah, guy wrote Watchmen, wrote Tom Strong, wrote Promethea, mm-hmm. wrote, you know what I mean? Like, all down
yeah,
the
absolutely.
Line. So
oh, yeah.
in your book, I just really loved. I loved all the dialogue. I loved the art and everything like that. It's just the basis of the world. Maybe it's maybe the term isn't too dark. It's just real. You know what I mean?
Right.
Is that this is like real? You know, very
yeah.
close to a dark just side of reality.
Close to home.
Yeah.
Is,
well,
what I
not my
I,
home,
I
but
is,
yeah, for sure.
It feels like a couple of tweaks, a couple of things here and there. It feels like we could be actually experiencing this. It feels like you could turn on the news and be like, and listen to a celebrity who just sold
yeah.
a body part or
I
something.
I mean,
like
I don't
that.
Think we're that far off. I mean, it's my
right.
fans, right? That's like a thing,
yeah.
right? Like that's
right.
that's great. Yeah. So I mean, yeah. How did you find your artist? I guess I should ask that, because that is one aspect of the book that I really love.
Neil found Andre, actually, right, Neil?
I can't remember.
You can. Well, take
yeah,
credit
no,
for
I,
it, Neil.
I
know all the best artists in the world. I found him.
Yeah, we found Andre. Andre's great, dude.
Yeah.
I will say, artist. If you look at his artwork, it improves as well during the series.
Yeah, I would say.
He really gets the characters like down as the series goes on, like in a good way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's just like a real fluidity of line. There's no stiffness in the characters. Mm-hmm. Everything, the storytelling, like, really works. I mean, I tend to be a fan of sort of that manga inspired and, you know, right. animation inspired work. And it's mostly because when I was younger, you know, I was like the George Perez, like John Byrne, Jose Luis Garcia mm-hmm. Lopez, like all those artists. And mm-hmm. their work is great, but there's a stiffness to it. And it wasn't until like I got older and started paying attention, like animation artists and stuff like that, and manga, quite frankly, where I was mm-hmm. just like, oh, there's kind of like a more fluid way for things to proceed. And what I really liked about this is that it's that sort of style, but without being juvenile or kid-like, you know what I'm mm-hmm. saying? And everything moves like really well. So you were very lucky. I'm sorry, what was an artist's name?
Andre Rizzo.
Gotcha. I mean, he's great. I loved his stuff. What other stuff has he done? Or is this like his first thing?
Oh, no. He works for Aspen Comics. Do you know Aspen?
Oh, yeah. I've heard of them. Sure.
Yeah, he does some work for Aspen. I'm trying to remember the other. He's done several books.
I'm going to have to look him up.
And then he teaches.
Oh, okay.
As well, I think I could be wrong about that, but I think he teaches as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, he's a lovely dude. Lovely dude.
And I very much love the colors by I'm gonna try and pronounce it, Lizel.
You can just say Liz. It's Liz Buenaventura.
Liz Buenaventura.
The yeah. colors on the first two issues, and then the last three issues are Agnese Poza.
Gotcha. And lettered by Jed McPherson. Hi, Jed, who's been on the podcast yeah. before. And yeah. Kat Jackson.
That is correct.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can't say enough good stuff about this book. I mean, I really, really enjoyed it. Again, I picked it up and I was just like into it all the way. I don't know mm-hmm. if that says something weird about me, but I was just like, oh, I am in this. And you guys have done like a phenomenal job with this.
Thank you so much.
I mean, it's very impressive stuff. And I appreciate you coming back onto the podcast, Neil. Even though you don't know what it was. So wait, Raymond, where can people find you online?
I just made a Twitter.
Wait a minute. You were the guy who like worked with influencers and did all this stuff. And
I also run Twitters professionally, but I didn't have a personal Twitter because I didn't want to.
And why is that, Tyler? I mean, excuse me, Raymond.
I
call
know.
You Tyler.
It's just, I think it's just because it a lot of times reminds me of work. I used to have one.
Gotcha.
If that makes sense. And then I started doing social media professionally, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just got to the point where I didn't want to look at it after, which yep. a lot of people have the opposite experience. They do social media, then they absolutely kill it on their own social media. That isn't me.
Oh yeah.
until now, I made a Twitter, which is Raymond Tyler at Ray Tyler Comics. You can follow me, and I'll definitely post regularly.
Okay, well that's cool.
Yeah.
No, and Neil, people can find you everywhere, right? Like tpubcomics.com.
Pretty much. Or at TPUB Comics on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I won't answer because I don't do social media. I'm stupid and rubbish at it.
Yeah, me too. maybe Raymond can teach us yes. stuff. But it's tpubcomics.com, right? Like that's the URL?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I really enjoy TPUB stuff. I have for a long time. I don't just blow smoke up Neil's ass. I really do enjoy it. And it's not just because I've had lunch with Neil in person in London once, which was a very lovely afternoon. I must say he's a perfectly nice gentleman. And you should, if you ever meet him in person, you should say hi. So are you going to New York Comic Con this year, Neil?
I am, yes. Unfortunately, I just canceled Seattle. I'm not going to Seattle anymore.
Oh, but, why? Yeah. Any big reason or was it just personal?
No, it's not personal. I just want to strangle some people.
Oh, okay. I will leave it at that because
we have not...
Sorry? We
have stock issues and paper delivery, so getting enough books there didn't make financial sense to happen.
Oh, gotcha.
We will be there. Like, Stacey will be running the booth for us, but I'm just not going to be there myself.
Oh, you won't be there yourself. Okay, gotcha. Okay, cool. And Raymond, any appearances for you in the near future?
So you'll actually see, if it's okay for me to mention, I'm doing some more writing with T-Pub, so y'all might see me in some other books.
Excellent.
Seem to get along and write well together.
Nice.
I have another book coming out, which is actually a historical graphic novel called The Battle of Blair Mountain.
Cool.
It is a nonfiction, going to be very different than Amputation Capital, but it's about the West Virginia coal mine wars.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
And I'm doing that with an awesome comics dude named Paul Buell. So that will be, and then another cartoonist named Summer McClinton. So that'll be out in 2023. But besides that, check out the Kickstarter, and I'm sure you'll see some more stuff from Neil and I from T-Pub, because we like working together.
I hope so. Well, I very much loved this. I loved Amputation Capital. It is currently on Kickstarter. A really great. I mean, I'm going to say fun. I know I've said dark, but it's. To me, I don't know. It was fun. I don't know. Maybe that's my brain. But again, go to Kickstarter. Check out Amputation Capital. Throw it some of your money, maybe some of your body parts, or sell some of your body parts so that you can throw money at it. Again, I have had Raymond Tyler and Neil Gibson on the line. Thank you so much for joining me, gentlemen. I very much appreciate it. My name is Christian Horn. This has been the Part-Time Fanboy podcast that Neil has been on before, but completely forgot how it all worked. My name is Christian Horn, and you can check us out on all that wonderful social media stuff, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. Please check out Amputation Capital. If I could offer a money back guarantee, I would, but I don't have the money to give back to you. I think it's a great book. I loved it. And I love the Part-Time Fanboy podcast. So thank you for listening, and we will be back soon with another episode. Bye.
Part-Time Fanboy.